This is Radio Times from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscowane. This hour, we look at travel by air. It can seem less like flying the friendly skies than an attempt to keep tempers in check. There are fees for everything from baggage to food. Passengers are being packed onto increasingly crowded planes. And yes, some are resorting to knee defenders, risking what is now called recline rage. We'll get into all that as well as ways to make flight easier. But first, we take a look at how seats and seating themselves have changed. Bill McGee is author of Attention All Passengers. He's an airline veteran and was the consumer advocate on the U.S. Department of Transportation's Future of Aviation Advisory Committee. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning, Mary. Thanks very much.
So as most of us have heard, no fewer than three flights were diverted several weeks back because of disputes over legroom and reclining, and we all learned about a little device known as the knee defender. Let's take a close look at seats in the economy class, starting with something called seat pitch. What is that exactly?
That's basically an airline industry term that that indicates how much legroom you're going to have. It's the distance in inches from one seat to the seat in front or behind.
So,
and what we've seen is that over time, and this is now documented, I spent the better part of a week researching it, you're not going crazy. Airline seats really are tighter and narrower than they've been in the recent past. I dug out the archives from Consumer Reports Travel Letter, where I used to be the editor. And going back 30 years, we used to do an annual examination, airline by airline and aircraft by aircraft, to see who had the best and most comfortable seats. And when you compare it to the numbers that are available now, you see that seat pitch has decreased in some cases by up to 5 inches on some airlines. And the width of airline seats has gotten tighter as well by several inches.
All right, so let's go.
You know,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Imagination that it's tighter.
So let's talk about that, the seat pitch. So what is it now? What is the standard? You said it's decreased by about 5 inches, so the seat in front of you is really 5 inches closer?
Yeah, you know, these days the tightest seat pitch on the major airlines, American, Delta, United, Southwest, is anywhere from 30 inches in the best cases up to 33 inches. In the past, the minimums used to be 31 or 32, and they were as high as 36 or 37. When you're talking about a couple of inches, this can be quite critical.
Sure. And you said the width of the seats has also changed. So what are we talking about in terms of inches?
Yeah, what we've seen is that in the past, the absolute minimums for U.S. airlines were 19 inches, and they were as much as 20 inches. Again, this is just an economy class. We're not even talking about up front. Now they're down to 17.2 inches, 17 inches even in some cases. And it should be pointed out that Airbus, the major aircraft manufacturer, recommends that a bare minimum should be 18, but U.S. airlines have rejected this.
And all this while Americans in general have gotten bigger.
Well, that's no question. Yeah, we dug up some research from Consumer Reports going back about 15 years that, believe it or not, there was a British ergonomics firm that basically measured butt sizes across the world, and proud to say, of course, that USA came in number one, and it doesn't seem to be any indication that we've lost our title in recent years.
Okay, and all of this is in an effort to get more people onto the plane.
Well, no question, and I think, you know, that's in my view, that's the factor that gets overlooked the most of all of the changes that have overtaken the airline industry in recent years. I think the thing that affects passengers as dramatically as anything is what they call load factors, basically the percentage of occupied seats. To put it into context, for decades and decades since World War II, the average load factors on U.S. airlines were in the 50s or 60s, 55%, 60%. In the 1990s, it started getting up into the 70s and 80s. It's now the average load factor for U.S. airlines last year was 84%. It's been as high as 86 and 87% in recent months. Basically, airplane cabins are so full now that, of course, also affects your comfort. The idea of having an empty seat next to you these days is almost impossible.
Sure, let alone trying to get something into the overhead bin. Are people complaining loudly?
Well, You know, that's the funny thing. In some, by some measurements, the airline industry says that people are, that passengers are more, are more satisfied because complaints have gone down. But I really, you know, with all of the letters I get from readers and all of the discussions that I have with passengers, I have to reject that. I think that, you know, to a large extent, a lot of passengers have sort of given up. They either, you know, reduce their flying as much as they can, or they sort of suck it up and say, well, there's nothing that can be done about it. But the idea that passengers are comfortable or satisfied with, you know, with economy class these days, I really find that hard to believe.
All right. So what would we find up front in the plane in first class, Bill?
Well, up front, it's going to be a much different situation. Up front, you're probably going to see that, you know, the width of the seat is going to be 4 or 5 inches more. The seat pitch can be, you know, as much as 5 to 10 inches more. And then, of course, there's all kinds of amenities. But, you know, to put it in context, a business class fare or a first class fare, particularly if you're booking at the last minute, it can be anywhere from, you know, 3 to 5 times more, even more than that, the price of economy.
But airlines aren't trying to put more people up front and you know, shave inches off seats up there. Or are they?
Well, to be honest with you, when you look at U.S. airlines versus airlines from Europe and Asia and the Middle East, you'll find that the premium products are just not, you know, not as comfortable and not as the amenities are not as high. But again, you know, if you're comparing economy to premium class, then I think, you know, most passengers would love to be up front if they could.
Sure. Well, okay, so back to economy. Are changes in seat pitch and seat width unique to America's airlines?
Overall, they're not, but the crunch is really here in America. When you look at U.S. airlines and you compare them, there's a website that's very handy called Seat Guru, and it provides detailed information on seats and amenities and airlines around the world. And when you compare U.S. carriers to others, you'll see just how bad it is.
Hey, Bill,
In fact, you know, Spirit Airlines here in the United States has a seat pitch of just 28 inches, which some people believe is not even safe.
Hmm. I love this tweet that we got from a person named Newt. They might as well just insert people into tubes and load the tubes onto the plane. So he's not satisfied with air travel. And I do want to give out the telephone numbers because this is something that affects so many of us. 1-888-477-9499 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about air travel all this hour on Radio Times. You can send us an email if you like at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So, Bill McGee, when you have a full packed flight, tempers are more likely to rise.
Well, no question. And I think, you know, what we've seen with this whole knee defender battle that's been going on is that, you know, even online, let alone in airline cabins, airline passengers seem to have broken off into two warring factions. But I think it's important to remember that there are systemic factors here and that the airlines deserve a lot of the responsibility for what's going on. That doesn't excuse poor behavior, of course, but the fact is, you know, things have changed, and they've changed dramatically, and not for the best.
And could you just kind of give us a quick description of the knee defender? Pretty much when that's locked into place, the person in front of you cannot recline. What does
right,
it look
exactly.
like?
Exactly. It's a pretty simple device. You put it on your lap, and it pushes up against the seat in front of you. And when the person hits the recline button up front, they can't push back. You know, but I was on a flight a few weeks ago where there was a guy next to me. He was about 6'5", and his knees were his knee defender because his knees were pushed up against the tray table. And without a knee defender, the person in front was trying to push back and couldn't do it. Hmm. That's where we are these days, you know. It's become a very uncomfortable experience for a lot of passengers.
Knee defenders are not illegal, but most airlines don't allow them, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I sort of liken it to rolling papers in some ways, you know. They're legal to buy, but, you know, they may be illegal to use.
Interesting analogy. Okay, do you know, airline staff often end up in the middle of this. Are they complaining about this situation?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, I used to work in the airline industry myself, and I have tremendous sympathy for you know, flight attendants in particular, because they're in the front lines in this battle. That's not to say that, you know, that some of them haven't abused their power as well. But I think overall, you know, flight attendants have been asked to do some, you know, some really tough work in recent years, because as the misery index increases on flying, they're in the front lines and they're the ones that take a lot of the abuse, whether it's about overhead bin space or knee defenders or having to charge for, you know, sodas and all the rest of it, and they hear it constantly. A lot of these air rage incidents are not between passengers, but between passengers and flight attendants. But again, I think it's important to not to excuse the behavior in any way, to be very clear, but I think it's important to look at some of the systemic factors that are contributing to this. There's a reason we're seeing these incidents.
Sure. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox has weighed in on the debate over legroom, saying, quote, "Travelers aren't sardines," end quote. And he goes on to say he hopes the industry sees these incidents as a message from consumers. However, Bill, he can't do anything to compel airlines to change legroom standards, can he?
He could, but I don't see it happening, quite frankly. I mean, the DOT would have it within its authority to mandate minimums, but quite frankly, my book, Attention All Passengers, details this at great length, how the airline industry has really turned the tables, and in my view, what so many people in the front lines are telling me on issues much more critical than this, on safety, on maintenance, on piloting standards, the airline industry dictates to the DOT and the FAA what should be done, not in reverse. So, quite frankly, I'm very, very cynical that the DOT will step in on this.
If you're looking for extra legroom and you can't move up out of economy, what are your options?
Well, you know, the best options are to try and find the best possible seat. Now, of course, many other people are trying to do the same thing, so not everybody's going to be happy, not when you have load factors of 86 or 90%.
Sure.
Again, there's just not that many empty seats. But there are extra legroom seats that are available in economy class on many carriers. So, you know, you might want to look at that, the extra legroom or the bigger seats. This is, again, not moving up front, but staying in economy, but paying you know, a much more moderate fee, maybe $25 or $50 in some cases. You also want to confirm your seat assignment as soon as you can. Now, airlines have made that difficult in some cases because I wrote a column last year that addressed this. They're withholding seats in some cases, so you'll pay more for them at the last moment.
Hmm.
But if you can either do it online or even call reservations like we used to in the old days to try and confirm your seat assignment as early as you can, that would be the best thing. And, of course, you'd want to, if possible, sit in a bulkhead row, you know, behind a galley or a lavatory or an emergency exit row or a row with a door will probably give you a few more inches, and also you won't have to deal with the reclining seat in front in some cases.
All right. Bill McGee, thank you so much for joining us for the first part of our show on air travel.
Thank you very much.
Bill is author of Attention All Passengers. And after the break, we'll hear from Scott McCartney. He writes the middle seat column for the Wall Street Journal. And as always, if you'd like to weigh in, here's the number to call, 1-888-477-9499. Or you can send us an email if you like at radiotimes@whyy.org. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. More in just a moment.
Supporting WHYY, Bryn Mawr College invites artists, journalists, scholars, and experts to the campus to explore the reasons behind and the realities of dissent, violence, and justice. The series kicks off October 1st with a lecture by Mona El-Tahawi, an award-winning columnist and international public speaker on Arab and Muslim issues based in New York. Her talk, titled Revolution, One Ism at a Time, The Global Fight Versus Sexism, Racism, and Other Isms, begins at 7 p.m. at Thomas Great Hall at Bryn Mawr College. No ticket required and open to the public.
Hi, I'm filmmaker Ken Burns. You choose WHYY because you appreciate the shows it delivers every day, because it offers something different. WHYY provides trustworthy news coverage, offers a gateway to the arts, and educates viewers and listeners of all ages with support from individuals like you. Visit WHYY.org or call 888-345-9499. And as always, thank you.
Opera Philadelphia presents The Barber of Seville. Rossini's rapid-fire comedy kicks off with a famous overture and veers into a series of disguises, trickery, and tomfoolery. The Barber of Seville at the Academy of Music from September 26th through October 5th. Tickets and information for The Barber of Seville at operaphila.org or 215-893-1018. Opera Philadelphia supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moshka-Wayne. We're talking about air travel this hour, tackling fees, legroom, packed planes, you name it. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. And joining us for the remainder of the show is Scott McCartney. He writes the Middle Seat column for the Wall Street Journal and is their travel editor. He also blogs on travel at the Middle Seat Terminal. Welcome, Scott.
Good to be with you, Mary.
So let's look at fees first. Fees for services, which used to be part of the ticket cost. When did the number of fees start to escalate?
Well, the big change really came in about 2009 when oil prices spiked to $146 a barrel. And that's when airlines across the board, except for Southwest and at the time JetBlue, went for baggage fees. That's been a huge moneymaker. Some fees have been around for a long time. The pretty punitive change fee, the penalty for changing a ticket on airlines, has been around a while. Back in the day, it was $50, now as much as $150 on domestic tickets and $250, $300 on international tickets. So that's gone up recently, but I think for most travelers, the real fundamental change was when airlines started charging for baggage, and that was about 5 years ago now.
And give us a little bit more of a list, if you would. So there's baggage, there's early boarding, what else?
Well, depending on the airline, there's a fee for everything. If you fly Spirit, they now have really sort of quite proudly marketed their basic fare. They'll call the naked fare, mm-hmm. and then if you want anything else, a seat assignment, a window seat, you want a boarding pass printed at the airport, just a list of things. They're charging a fee for a carry-on bag in the overhead bin, things like that. And on most major network airlines, there's a very high fee for carrying a pet on board the airplane, $125 or so, and that's one way that the pet in a pet carrier counts as your one of your carry-on bags. And you're doing the work. The airline's not providing any service except allowing you to put your small pet under the seat in front of you. And there's a fee for that. There's a fee for unaccompanied minors has gone up dramatically. There is a service that the airline provides with that, and it's gotten more expensive. But the huge drivers of fees, and we're talking about upwards of $3 billion a year for the airline industry in the United States, baggage fees and the change cancellation fee.
And yet airplanes have been full this summer, I understand.
Airplanes have been very full this summer, yeah. And part of that is the number of flights has been reduced some. The number of travelers has actually gone up. About 2% more this year than the previous year, so planes are fuller. People clearly want to travel. I think coming out of the recession, there was a lot of pent up demand for travel. But you know, travel is you don't go on vacation for the airplane flight. You go on vacation to get somewhere. Or you go visit relatives, or you go conduct business, or all those things. Nobody gets on a plane for the experience on the plane, with a few exceptions of crazy frequent flyers who are doing mileage runs and things like that. So as cramped as conditions are, and they certainly are cramped, people are still going.
Although safe to say, nobody wants to be completely aggravated on their first day of vacation heading out someplace, too.
Well, no, and it certainly happens all the time.
Sure.
Airline loses your bag and vacation gets really turned upside down. And by the way, there's now a fee for that. Spirit Airlines, if they lose your bag, you're on vacation. Did a story about this with some folks who went to a beach destination, arrived with no bathing suits, sandals, anything else. Spirit said, sure, go go buy yourself a bathing suit and enjoy your vacation. And then if they wanted to be reimbursed by the airline for the bathing suit, they actually had to mail, at their expense, mail the bathing suit into the airline for reimbursement.
Well, how did they get away with that?
Well, in a sense, they, you know, because they are buying you the bathing suit, they want it back. It's obviously a punitive thing to try and discourage. You know, you buy a bathing suit, you like it, you want to keep it, and gets the airline off the hook from reimbursing you. You know, Spirit would say, "Hey, what people want are low fares, and the way to offer low fares is to keep our expenses as low as possible. So if we limit the reimbursement for lost bags we have to provide, that's going to help us keep fares low."
Okay, Scott. According to Airlines for America, the industry trade group, the top nine domestic carriers earned close to $4 billion for the first half of this year, compared with only about $1.5 billion during that time last year. But the industry has been troubled so long. Is the perception that it's stabilized and rolling in dough now correct?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you know, we won't know if it's stabilized, I think, until we get to the next downturn. And rolling in dough is relative in the airline industry. Compared to what airlines have historically done, yeah, they're rolling in dough. Compared to most other businesses, no way. This is an industry still with thin profit margins, but certainly a whole lot better than it used to be. But this is also an industry that is notorious for serial bankruptcies. Carriers that two and three times have gone bankrupt. Huge turnover in the industry. It's been one of a huge number of startups and failures, and has always been a really difficult way to make money. Well, now they've found some ways that they think are sustainable and they can make money, and they're doing it in a high fuel cost environment, and fuel is a huge percentage of an airline's operating cost. All that, in a sense, is good because it's allowed airlines to invest in their product. It's allowed them to buy new planes, to upgrade amenities like Wi-Fi, in-flight entertainment, things like that. It's allowed them to provide fancier services to their top customers, their business travelers, to whom they really cater. It's really an industry that is divided by class. If you're a frequent flyer, you spend a lot of money in an airline, you have a completely different experience than the one-time traveler in the back of the bus.
Sure.
To say airline profits are nowhere near what Apple is making, for example, on its computers or things like that, and it's a tough business. It's a labor-intensive business. It has very high capital costs. Airplanes are enormously expensive. It's an industry that conducts its business outdoors and is really subject to, the whims of Mother Nature, and there aren't many other businesses that can say that. What would quality be like on General Motors cars if they had to build them during rainstorms?
Sure, and also one note here, and then we're going to get to the phones because we've got a lot of calls coming in. This is happening today. Flights are grounded at Chicago's O'Hare and Midway airports because of a fire at an air traffic control facility. You've got hundreds of flights grounded, and then you've got a huge ripple effect. So much is interconnected with the airline industry, and then people are going to face cancellations on the East Coast and the West Coast and et cetera.
Absolutely, and it'll take a long time to recover, and flights will be canceled. And because those flights are so full, it's difficult for people to get a seat on the next flight or the next flight after that, and sometimes people get stuck for days. But it's also another example of, the airline industry is really dependent upon the government and the FAA, and that's not always the best provider of efficient service. So it's just one more reason why it is a tough business, and certainly why travel is really tough for travelers.
Okay, Scott McCartney, let's get to the phones. Bill, you're live on Radio Times. Welcome.
Thank you. I have a lost baggage question. I went home to a class and family reunion on August 20th, and flew back. I flew back on August 20th on Delta. The plane was so full that I volunteered to fly to Allentown rather than Philadelphia. I got to Allentown, and my bag wasn't there, and I came home, and I found myself dealing with Delta and filing a claim with Delta, and they ultimately put the bag on a U.S. Air flight from Philly to Allentown, or back to Philly from Allentown, and then because I flew on SkyWest to Allentown, I found myself dealing with someone in Utah who was looking for my bag on a U.S. Air flight. And, you know, I really, everybody that I dealt with was very, very kind and efficient, but I'm faced with a lost bag, and I really want the bag because it's got all my reunion and reunion material and family reunion material as well as my clothes. And I just wondered, is there any way to follow up with U.S. Air to see if they can find the bag?
Well, thanks for the call to Radio Times, Bill. Scott, my head is aching just hearing this story. But, you know, he volunteered, his bag did not, and now it's in no man's land.
Yeah, no good deed goes unpunished often in the airline business. I think the best thing you can do is try and get a local number for baggage department in Allentown for U.S. Air or the U.S. Air station manager in Allentown. You might even try calling the Allentown airport and seeing if somebody there can give you a number for U.S. Air folks at Allentown. It's possible the bag is sitting in Allentown and not getting delivered, but it would be good to know if it's there or if it never arrived in Allentown, still in Philadelphia. It's unfortunate. You kind of have to be your own detective, but the best thing you can do, and I always tell people, if your bag does get lost, don't accept just the 800 number to call for baggage service. Say when you're at the counter, say, I want a local number for the baggage office here, and you can get that. It's not always answered when they're busy and things like that. You have to keep trying, but it's a huge hassle. The good news is airlines have actually gotten better at baggage handling. A lot of that is because there are fewer bags checked because of baggage fees. But more often than not, people do get their bag back eventually.
All right, Scott, let's go to Jay Sherry in Delaware. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I have been recently doing a lot of airline ticket purchasing online. And we've noticed we've got an Apple computer and we've got just a regular computer that if we purchase or if we're shopping for tickets on our laptop, over the course of the 45 minutes or an hour that we're sort of price shopping and comparing, the price seems to go up. And just out of curiosity, I switched to looking for prices on the exact same flights and airlines on my Apple computer with a different IEP address and noticed that the flights were the original flights that I had seen on the original computer. And I'm wondering, is there some internal tracking going on when you're price shopping, and are they inherently increasing the prices knowing that you're sort of shopping around and interested?
Great question, Jay Sherry. Scott?
It is a great question. People have looked hard at this. This does happen, and it's not clear exactly why. The industry answer for it, and there's a lot of skepticism about it, but the industry answer is it's really a cash issue. So it's a timing issue of information and how often it's updated. When you do a search online, if you're using a third-party vendor or sometimes even an airline website, it often delivers a price that is dated. So that information may be 10 minutes old, it may be 20 minutes old. But they some of these sites don't update and go ask for a seat until you get further into the booking process. And so that's when you get the, oops, we're sorry, the price has changed. And it's really sort of to keep down the number of queries that are made on airline reservation systems. They use sort of saved data. And it's not always accurate data. Now, that said, there are instances where simply doing searches can tell the airline that, gee, we think there's higher demand for this, and sometimes airline computers will bump up the price if they see a lot of search activity because they're using that to measure demand. If it's the same person searching over and over again, and people do this all the time, and I do it because prices do bounce up and down, then you can sort of affect the price all by yourself. It's not a perfect science. The reality is if you don't buy the ticket, the airline's going to figure that out, and the price is probably going to come down. It's the bouncing up and down of airfares does make people crazy. It's very difficult how the industry prices its tickets for people. The best advice is you have to sort of decide what's a good price in your head. When you see it, buy it, and wait if you can for a better price.
Hey, Scott, let's tackle cleanliness in light of the Ebola crisis and the new attention about the risks of spreading illness during travel. What, if any, are government or industry standards?
Well, there are none.
Oh.
It's very interesting. Basically, airlines are on their own in terms of cleanliness. The one exception is the Food and Drug Administration does look after airplane galleys in terms of food that gets served or water that gets served. And they do, periodic inspections. Not a whole lot, but they do some. But otherwise, airlines, tell the FAA that they're going to provide clean planes, and the FAA says, Roger. And there aren't any inspections of bathrooms or things like that.
Well, are they generally swabbed in between flights, the bathrooms?
Generally, the bathrooms often will get a quick once-over between flights, but that's not always the case. The way it generally works is on domestic service between flights, sometimes airlines are trying to turn that plane around in 20, 30 minutes. A cleaning crew runs through, picks up trash, wipes up obvious spills. They don't go through the seat back pockets unless there's something, really messy hanging out.
And you say those seat back pockets can be particularly scuzzy.
Yeah, that's a danger zone in terms of people put old food wrappers, they put Kleenex that they've sneeze into, they put dirty diapers, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into the seat back pocket. And so it's not until overnight that airplanes generally get a good cleaning, and that involves wiping off tray tables and vacuuming and things like that, and certainly a good disinfecting of the bathroom. In between flights, it sort of catch-as-catch-can. If they have 45 minutes in between and they can give it a good cleaning, they do some, but it's not like the good scrubbing that gets overnight. Now, international flights, they generally get sort of a overnight-type cleaning in between. With the Ebola, it's interesting to note the World Health Organization put out some guidelines for airlines. The Centers for Disease Control did as well, but the CDC applied mostly to how to protecting airline workers,
Scott?
And how to handle sick patients.
Okay, we're up on a break, so we're going to have to take that point up in just a moment. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Back in just a moment.
The Dow Chemical Company supports WHYY. Dow combines the power of science and technology to help address many of the world's most challenging problems. Together, the elements of science and the human element can solve anything. Learn more at Dow.com.
Support for WHYY comes from Beck Institute for Cognitive Behavior Therapy. Dr. Judith Beck and Dr. Aaron Beck welcome new clients to their Center for Psychotherapy in Bala Cynwyd. Beck Institute is committed to providing effective, problem-focused, and compassionate treatment for issues such as anxiety, depression, stress, and weight management. To learn about cognitive behavior therapy or to schedule an appointment, beckinstitute.org or 610-664-3020.
Theater Philadelphia supports WHYY and announces the launch of the 2014-15 theater season. Barrymore Award judges are now reviewing productions in the greater Philadelphia area. Those deemed Barrymore recommended, as well as information and tickets for all participating shows, are found at theaterphiladelphia.org. A celebration to present the Barrymore Awards for Excellence in Theater for last season will be held on Monday, October 27th at the Merriam Theater at the University of the Arts. Details at theaterphiladelphia.org.
The Philadelphia Inquirer supports WHYY and offers the Live Life Love section, a new arts and entertainment section in the Sunday Inquirer, which includes upcoming concerts and events, fashion, coupons, restaurant reviews, and more. Details at inquirer.com/haveyouseenit.
We're looking at air travel this hour of Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. What do you think of flying and fees? If there's something you'd like to talk about, the lines are open. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. And our guest for the remainder of the hour is Scott McCartney. He writes the middle seat column for the Wall Street Journal, and he also blogs on travel at the Middle Seat Terminal. And just as we were going into the break, Scott, we were talking about cleanliness and the World Health Organization. And I just wanted to get to one more point before we get back to the calls. You say one thing airlines do respond to is complaints about dirty airplanes.
Yeah, they do. They respond more when they have money to clean things. Cleanliness has been a cyclical thing. And in bad times, they really cut back on cleanliness. But they do pay attention, because what they found is the research shows if you see something dirty on an airplane, it can really ruin the experience, and you think the rest of it. I mean, it can even cause people to, you know, wonder if the maintenance work was done on the airplane and stuff like that. So cleanliness really matters to travelers, and airlines know this and try and recognize that.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Kathy in Emos, Pennsylvania, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm calling because I recently booked a flight to Prague through United Airlines, and my initial leg is on United, but then I have to switch to Brussels Air. And on my return flight, I'm coming back via Lufthansa, and I am not allowed to pick a seat at this point. They said I have to pick my seats at check-in, and I'm wondering why, if United is booking the flight, why they can't book me seats.
Scott?
It's a interesting and very common issue with co-chairing flights. So airlines are selling tickets on each other, but they haven't fully integrated to the extent that they change their seating policy. So a lot of international airlines don't allow advanced seat selection. Some have taken that further and are now charging a fee. British Airways is one, for example. If you want to reserve your seat in advance, you have to pay a fee for that. And so just like baggage charges and things like that, the policy of the airline actually flying the trip is what applies. And so you're stuck with Brussels seating policy.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Becca sends us an email, and she says her boyfriend, who travels several days a week, just paid $9 for an upgrade to an exit row so he has more leg room. He's not a tall man. He's 5'7", but even he feels cramped. An exit row?
Ooh, I hope he's not cramped in the exit row, and that's why you paid the $9. But certainly, sure, you could be 5'7", and be cramped. You could. There are... sometimes, depending on how your legs fit into the airline seat, it can, for short people, it can be a really uncomfortable experience. So there's no doubt. I mean, the amount of space in an airline row now, forward to back, is 30 to 31 inches, used to be 32 on average, and I'm generalizing across airlines. But that extra inch or two that has been lost came right from in front of your knees, no matter how tall you are.
Scott McCartney, let's talk about baggage theft. Is it common these days?
I think this is a problem that can be fixed that isn't being addressed as much as it should. I think it's less common than it used to be, in the sense that there's a lot more monitoring of people who handle your luggage. But that said, people open bags all the time and steal stuff out of bags all the time. Baggage rings are pretty sophisticated about this. And when you get up inside the airplane and there's a guy in there all alone throwing bags in, and, the airlines recognize that they have to really police this stuff, and some do better than others. There's also the issue of people just picking bags off the carousel and walking off with them. There are some better security cameras and things in place, but after 9/11, airlines pretty universally eliminated the people who were checking claim checks to make sure you actually were taking off with your bag. So it's been a persistent problem, and there have been a couple arrests lately. I think police are getting better about coordinating. You know, you take a trip, you go through two or three airports, and everybody sort of points the finger at, well, the theft must have happened somewhere at somebody else's airport. But they're getting better about coordination, and so I hope with technology that the tracking of bags and observing of TSA agents handling bags and things like that will get even better.
So some common sense precautions if you're flying with valuables.
Do not check valuables. Do not put valuables in your check bag. It's plain and simple. Hear too often from people who say, "Oh, I had my whole bag of jewelry in the bag because I was going to a big wedding or that kind of thing, and I got there and it wasn't there." You know, the bag gets x-rayed and looked at a lot of times. People have reported, and I think there's a lot of truth to this, that fancier bags are more likely to get the attention of thieves. You might consider kind of a beat-up, grungy bag instead of a fancy leather, expensive bag that says, hey, I got something good inside here. But by and large, just like prescription medicine and things that you have to have, carry it on. Do not check it. And if you get in the situation of overhead bins are full and your bag has to be gate checked, you really have to stop and think about what's in the bag. Take your iPad out. Take your jewelry out. Whatever you have to do, do not just send that on its way because it may not be there when you get to your destination.
We have a comment from Brent in Philly. He asks, are they using more recycled air in cabins? He travels a lot, and the air seems like it's stale.
You know, it's interesting with particularly with newer airplanes. There's recycled air is fine. What you really want, the airplanes now have very sophisticated HEPA filtration systems. So the air that comes out of the overhead vents is the cleanest air. And if you want to avoid catching colds, for example, open up that air vent because that's what you want to be breathing, not the air from people, you know, two rows on each side is sort of the hot zone. We've known for a long time that there's not a lot of fresh air that comes into the cabin. That's been the case for a long time. The air does get recycled. The air outside the airplane is extremely cold, and so it has to be heated before circulated into the cabin. They do some of that for keeping the temperature right, but by and large, it is recycled air, and by and large, it's perfectly fine.
You know, Scott, we've got a lot of calls, so let's get to them. John from Woodstown, New Jersey, welcome to Radio Times.
Yeah, I had a recent flight booked through British Air, and they also put me on a flight with Iberia. The British Air flight had great amenities, meal service, and movies, and so forth and so on, and they were about 95% or better full. The Iberia flight, I think, was about 50% full. You paid for your snacks, and I was thinking, why would the airline not upgrade the service and hopefully fill the plane up more? I'll
your
take
thoughts,
the answer
Scott?
Off air.
Thanks, John, for the call to Radio Times.
That's an interesting example. Iberia and British Air are now owned by the same company, so they are partners in siblings, if you will. And they serve different clientele, serve different markets. Iberia has really struggled cost-wise. I think that reflects the Spanish economy and the service that Iberia feels it can charge for and supply. It reflects the costs of the airline, the labor costs and borrowing costs and everything else for Iberia. And Iberia is going through a lot of transition right now. They actually have started buying some new airplanes. They've started trying to upgrade their business class. I think they recognize that they need to provide a better product, and they're working towards that. But as with any financially struggling company, it's going to be slow in coming.
Let's get your opinion, Scott, on something that Airbus has filed a patent for. It's a seat for short flights that Brian Fung from The Washington Post jokingly calls a medieval torture device. It looks like a cross between a bicycle seat and an office chair. But passengers would actually be able to change the height of the seat to be more comfortable, which might help taller passengers. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, and I think it's more for show and really sort of protection than anything else. This is not a seat that's going to show up in an airplane anytime soon. I think Airbus filed the patent just so that if we ever do come to that, they would get some money out of it. But the reality is what really controls the seating density on the airplanes now is the emergency evacuation certification that they get from either the FAA in the U.S. or the European agency in Europe. And so, for example, on a 737-800, I believe the maximum capacity is 186 passengers. That's the number of people that could evacuate from that airplane in a specified amount of time under specified conditions. So you can't put more than 186 passengers on that airplane. And guess what? Airlines, Ryanair, for example, Spirit, others are right up against that hard stop limit. So it can't get any more without recertifying the airplane. And that would involve putting more emergency exits on the airplane. That recertifying the airplane is a huge, expensive, complicated process that no manufacturer wants to go through. That said, 25 years from now, who knows how we'll be flying? Mm-hmm. But I think that one is not something we need to worry about, at least for a while.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Cindy in Levittown, Pennsylvania, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a comment, and that is that I have not flown since 1989, and I don't intend to for the remainder of my life. I'm perfectly happy being earthbound, and especially when I listen to programs like this, my resolve is strengthened.
Thanks for the call to Radio Time, Cindy. And actually, I was wondering that too, Scott. I mean, is anybody turning to Amtrak or their cars because they're not happy with what's happening in the air these days?
Certainly in short-haul flying. We've seen a big drop in short-haul flying. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think after 9/11, the security hassles were a big part of that. The regional jet service, which a lot of people find even more cramped and don't like, that's part of it. There are lots of reasons. Even Southwest Airlines has seen a fall off in demand for short-haul flying, where the car is a perfectly good alternative. With technology now, you can be totally plugged in as you drive along. You shouldn't be texting when you drive, but you got everything there, and you're not as out of touch as what 4 hours in a car used to be like. Long haul flying, it's the opposite. The demand is increasing, and I would say, we focus. It's a good point the caller makes. We focus a lot about the problems and the hassles, and there are tons of them. There's no doubt about that. But there's also the great joy of soaring through the air. I love to fly. As much as we focus on all the problems, it's still magical to me. It's wonderful to go places and meet people and see new things. And the hassle of 2 hours in a cramped seat, doesn't dissuade lots of people from the joy of an adventure on a new continent or something like that.
Well, let's talk about that time spent in a cramped seat. Etiquette. People have a right to recline, and yet, of course, it can be tough on the person behind them. So if you want to lie back, should you be able to, and how do you handle that?
Well, I think, the airline sells you a seat that where you have recline privileges, and so, you bought that, you should be able to do it. I think the best way to do it is to be kind to your fellow passengers. For all the reasons we've talked about, passengers are in this together and ought to be a little more respective of each other. You're going to recline the seat, turn around, look at the person and say, hey, I'm coming back. I'm going to recline the seat. I'm going to try and sleep and do it slowly rather than slamming it back, giving them a little warning, make sure you don't break their laptop computer or bump them in the head or whatever. Or vice versa. I've been, you know, in cramped conditions and had to work and gone to the person in front of me and said, you know, I hope you don't mind. I really would appreciate it if you can not recline your seat. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to use my computer or whatever. People haven't reclined, I've thanked them getting off the plane and say, you know, I was able to get a lot done. I really appreciate you not reclining. I think you know, just a little courtesy can really go a long way.
Sure. We have just time for this quick email note from a listener. Is it true that fares are cheaper if purchased on Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yeah, by and large, it is true. There's a particular rhythm to fare sales, and generally airline folks come in after the weekend and on Monday figure out what's selling and what's not and put out some sales on Tuesday and Wednesday, and they're often gone by Thursday, Friday. The weekend is often the most expensive time to buy tickets, even though that's when consumers do a lot of shopping. Business travelers aren't buying tickets on the weekend. Statistically, there is a little rhythm to it. Now, that doesn't mean that every flight, every time you're shopping, you're going to find something cheaper. But if you are shopping for a ticket and price seems high to you, and you got the time, you're far enough in advance to wait. Wait and see if a sale pops up and you can get a better price on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Scott McCartney, it was a pleasure.
Good to be with you, Mary.
Scott writes the middle seat column for the Wall Street Journal. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowitz. Thanks for joining us. Hour 2 is coming right up.